So y'all have gotten 3 hours of what this is and what the problem is. That's the depressing stuff. But do I seem depressed? I am not depressed. And I'm not, I mean, I've got what my mom would call an artistic temperament. That's in my family. I don't know if y'all have that expression here. In Texas, people with an artistic temperament are usually people that are a little, you know. That's the word that we use in my family. And so it's not like I'm just naturally always sunny and optimistic. But I also don't want to fight lost causes. That is depressing. This is not a lost cause. This is a cause that we not only can win, if we will do a few smart things and fewer stupid things, we are going to win this. And by win, what I mean is that the puberty-blocking drugs and the cross-sex hormones and the gender transition procedures on children and the social transition and the teaching of kids that they're really this disembodied thought and not sexed bodily beings is going to disappear. All the other things that we're interested in this room are going to disappear. I'm talking about this particular thing. This particular thing is going to be like eugenics. Now, what happened to eugenics? Eugenics got a bad branding. You want to know what the bad branding was? Nazism. So eugenics was hot stuff in the 1920s, and the leading thinkers in eugenics came from the good old United States of America. This is where it came from. Now, there were thinkers in Germany, and it was a sort of Western European phenomenon too, but then some guy with a funny mustache took it and ran, right? And so that caused the eugenics program to fall into disrepute for decades and decades, so that everyone just recognized, even if in their minds they thought, yeah, I really kind of like some of the people I don't like to be sterilized. I mean, there's probably some evil people that think that. No one would have thought that's a political program. Let's put that in the Republican platform. That's what happened to eugenics. It fell into disrepute. This is going to fall into disrepute, or if you, something less controversial, like lobotomies. Lobotomies were hot stuff, right? In which you put a spike up through the nose and you sever the two sides of the brain. It supposedly helped people. Well, it made them docile. So if that's what you're wanting, your wife's giving you trouble, you know. It can make them docile. So I guess there's a market for that, maybe, right? It's evil, though, and nobody should say this is a good thing. So that fell into disrepute. Nobody does that. But smart people and official groups at one point said that was a good idea. So if you think, how could this ever end? Those ended for that reason. And the reason is that they're so unstable and they're so contrary not just to special revelation, but to just nature, the created order, right? That when you do things that are completely contrary to the created order, say you do things that perpetually ignore gravity, for instance, right? You can try that, but that doesn't have a lot of staying power as a social program. Gender ideology does not have staying power as a social program because it is so completely insane. This is going to end one way or the other. So here's the way I fear it will end, or the only way it will end, is it will end 10 or 15 years hence, so 10 or 15 years from now, when we have, say, 100,000 20-somethings who are sterile, are infertile, whose bodies have been strangely mutilated, and they have debilitating lifelong problems as a result of things that doctors have done to them, right? That are still alive, that have no sexual function. So I haven't talked about this, but not only are they sterile, they don't have any of the basic sexual functions. So if you want to know what puberty-blocking drugs for a girl followed by testosterone for several years does, right? Like the things that cause people to get married and want to have sex, right? Doesn't work. So if you think that's how antibody and anti-sex this is, right, is that that would be a therapy. So what if we discovered, this does seem to slightly reduce rates of suicide? Would we do that and say, it turns out if you chop, a child's legs and arms off and cut their nose off, they will have slightly lower suicidal ideation. Would you say that should be the proper standard of care? No, you say, well, let's keep looking for an alternative, right? That's crazy. But that not only are we being told this is the proper standard of care and it solves the problem and it reduces rates of suicide, we're told that's the only thing. So if you want to say, well, why don't we try a few years of therapy and talk about some of the other problems the child is having? Oh, no, that's called conversion therapy, and that's now illegal in a bunch of states. Right? That's conversion therapy. So not operating on a child to transform their body to conform to a false gender identity, that's not conversion therapy. Conversion therapy is when you try to help a child become comfortable with the body that she has. That's how topsy-turvy this is. But there are lots and lots of victims. And I could go on and on about this, and I know some of them, but I want to tell you the story of one. Born Bruce Peter Reimer in Canada in 1965. Bruce was a twin boy. He had a brother named Brian. So we're in Canada, right? It's 1965. And in Canada, like the United States, most males are circumcised. And so the parents, when the boys were still young, they didn't get them circumcised at the hospital. And so they took them to get circumcised. And the doctor at the time was using an electric scalpel. That sounds like a bad idea. I don't understand the details here. And so there was a catastrophic accident with Bruce, all right? And it basically singed his penis beyond recognition and function. And so the parents are, of course, despondent. One of their two twin boys is going to not have sexual function. What do we do? And they were watching a news show, and they discovered a Dr. John Money from Johns Hopkins University in the United States. And what he said, he was working on this issue, and he said that actually children are whatever you tell them they are. Right? So if you raise a child to be a girl, she will be a girl. If you raise a boy to be a boy, he'll be a boy. And so they got excited, thought maybe this is the cure. And so they contacted Money. They ended up going to Johns Hopkins. Money agreed to treat them. They had several years in a relationship with Money. He did this. He said, okay, surgically remove the penis completely, change the name, right? So call her by girl name, dress her, have her do girl stuff. You know, like, how do you know what girl stuff is? You just do the stereotypical stuff, I guess, right? And so for years, he talked about this. The Today Show, of course, had him on talking about what a great success this was and how you could. Now, this is different from what we're dealing with now, but I want you to see. Right, because in this case, the claim wasn't that everybody has an internal gender identity that they just discover. The claim was that you will just be whatever you're told to be. So there, again, there still wasn't any kind of reality underneath there. Everything was ultimately sort of a social construction. And so the idea was that Bruce, as long as he was treated as a girl, would do that. Well, so his name was Brenda for several years. This is a picture of Money, by the way. So he's a celebrated person. Here's a picture of the brothers at one point around 1972. Okay, so there was a problem, though. Even though Money at the time, long into even the 21st century, was saying that this was a success and it worked, turns out Bruce, Brenda, the whole time knew something was wrong. And so weirdly, he kind of thought he was a boy. Now, in this case, this wasn't a gender identity. He was a boy. He just knew he was a boy, right? This isn't anything weird and metaphysical. And so he didn't like wearing dresses. He wanted to do stuff the boys did. And so finally, when he was a young teenager, his parents admitted what they had done. And so then he changed himself back. He changed his name not to Bruce, but to David, after King David, who slew Goliath, right? And lived as David Reimer. So this is him as a young adult. All right, now I'd like to believe that that was the end of the story. Money continued treating the brothers for years, including having them simulate sex acts together. All right, so this is again, like the other kind of weird sexology stories that you've heard, this is the same kind of thing. So it's a grotesque, there's a whole novel about this that was written before the current controversy that describes it. So, what happened? Well, this was also disturbing to David's brother, Brian, who killed himself with an overdose of antidepressants in 2002. And David Reimer, Brenda, Brian, he put a sawed-off shotgun in his mouth in 2004 and killed himself. That's how that story ends. So they're not walking around, right? They were in some ways the primary victims of this. Johns Hopkins, incidentally, was a pioneer of this gender-confirming surgery, cross-sex surgery. A brave head of that program named Paul McHugh actually shut it down when he realized it was bizarre and wasn't working. It's now been resuscitated. McHugh is still alive and speaking out against these things. All right? That's the primary victim. They're not walking around, so they can't sue anybody. The victims we're seeing right now are people like this. This transgender fighter, Alana McLaughlin, winning the MMA debut, his debut as a female in trans suicide. Now, what I like about this picture, this is the official Reuters picture, is that the woman that he beat to a pulp, you notice that's the official picture. Like, if you go get the news file photo, can you see her face? No, the camera is in front of her face, right? Now, there's a reason for this. I'll show you why. The reason is because she got beaten to a bloody pulp, and they, I guess, didn't want a picture of her bloody face. But notice that the effect of that picture was to erase her face, right? So the one woman in the ring gets erased by the media in the telling of the story. Now, this person, you can tell by looking at him, Alana, right? You could just, all I would need to see is a picture that was right here, and I'd be able to tell you that that was a male, right? And the pink hair doesn't do it. This is very dangerous. So men in almost all physical activities have, on average, are stronger, faster, and have more endurance for these kinds of things. But they especially excel when it comes to punching strength. In fact, punching strength for men is usually about twice what it is for women. And can you imagine a professional MMA fighter, how deadly that punch is? Right. So this is they're going to be people killed because of this. We've got female high school athletes. This is a group that's being represented by Alliance Defending Freedom right now in a case called Seoul versus the Connecticut Association of Schools. In most cases, though, girls like this, they want to be in college. They don't want to make trouble, right, if they want a college scholarship, so they don't speak out. So it's actually a brave souls that are actually willing to challenge this stuff. I can tell you, though, that the kind of peak craziness, the thing that sort of changed the narrative, in fact, I thank Leah Thomas of the University of Pennsylvania for what he did, because it was so obvious what was happening. So Thomas was an athlete, a collegiate swimmer as a male, went for his first 3 years as a male, and then he went on 9 months of estrogen, and then got to join the female athletic team at the University of Pennsylvania, which is an Ivy League school. This is him at the University of Pennsylvania NCAA championships in Atlanta after winning the 500-yard freestyle. And so as the other three, right, there was actually just two, but the number two and number three asked number four to come up, right, just because she should have been number three, right? That's what's happening. And now the athlete on the left is she's graduated and is now a very articulate critic of this stuff. But look at him, right? This is like Lurch standing there next to these girls, right? And so you know how this is going to go. Now, this is slightly frustrating to me because when this finally happened, Republican politicians were suddenly willing to talk about this. The outrage of men competing against girls in sports. Now, on the one hand, we have that. And then over here, we have kids being sterilized. So if I'm going to weigh those, I'm going to say this is much more significant. Why aren't you talking about this? And so part of me is like, I'm like Dick getting grumpy. Why aren't y'all talking about, you'll talk about this kind of safe thing, right? The bathroom stuff. Now, but my view is that, look, if this gets the conversation going, great. My worry is that states are going to pass sports bills, and they'll make sure that boys don't compete against girls in sports, and they'll think that they're done. They are not done. They have just gotten started. So fine if you want to kind of whet your appetite and sharpen your teeth or whatever with that, but they cannot be allowed to sort of diffuse the frustration and the political will to do what actually needs to be done. And so these are, at the moment, the kind of visible victims. So these are the victims I'm thinking about. This is what got me involved. This is Helena Kirshner. This is her as a little girl. Well, Helena, when she was a young a teenager, and she's actually a lucky one, I'll tell you that, so you don't get too worried, went to a Planned Parenthood, didn't tell her parents, in Illinois, wanted to get testosterone, first visit, and the nurse practitioner said, well, how much do you want? So I don't know, how much can I have? Gave her 100 milligrams. This is anabolic steroid level for a male, right? This is a lot of testosterone every week. So just what you would expect happened. So she was incidentally depressed, several serious psychological disorders at the time that actually needed to be treated that were not being treated. So you start testosterone, euphoric, strong, didn't need to sleep as much, body composition changes. She didn't like her body. She didn't like her legs. You know, it was like very specific things that she didn't like that all of a sudden got better with testosterone. And she was aggressive. Then her voice started changing and her face started changing. And she got psychotic. And she's had to go to psychiatrist and she had to be institutionalized. And she talked with something like 5 psychiatrists. Guess how many said, maybe it's the testosterone. Zero. None of them did. So she started transitioning, right? So here's some pictures of her in the process of transitioning, right? So if you know, so it's just testosterone at this point. She was too old to have started puberty blockers. So it's just testosterone and then hairstyle and things like that. All right? So here she is now. The middle, that's her at sort of peak transition. And these are pictures of her in the last year. And you may have seen her because she was on in Tucker Carlson documentary, and she has now testified in several state hearings on this issue. She's lucky. She had a few years of testosterone. It did change her face, but she's still just a young woman, right? And she's now an adult and actively campaigning against this stuff. And I can tell you that God has blessed us with some incredibly articulate detransitioning and desisting women who are, you know, I mean, these are Joan of Arcs, right? The French beat the British with just one, right? We're going to have a dozen of these. I don't know why this is, but they're smart and they're articulate and they're angry and they're not going to be intimidated by trolls on the internet not to talk about this. So that's what's happening. They are building an army that is going to defeat them. It's happened in the UK. This was Keira Bell, same kind of story. Given hormone puberty blockers at age 16 after 3 one-hour sessions at the Tavistock Clinic, which is now closed, later prescribed testosterone, had a double mastectomy at 20, and she's now, I think she's 23 or 24, she's detransitioning, she's been working her way through the courts trying to sue the Tavistock Clinic. The Tavistock Clinic is now closed, and there is a class action lawsuit in the making with 1,000 plaintiffs, right? So she's the one that just kind of broke the ice. Now, there have been other detransitioners. Some of you may have even heard or seen Walt Heyer. This is Walt in 1977. He transitioned. He had surgery. He did all this stuff. Lived for years as a woman. And then eventually got some counseling. It was a pastoral counseling that made him realize that actually he had this distorted self-image because his grandma, who basically raised him, wanted him to be a girl and would have him dress up in dresses whenever he was at her house. And, you know, he worked his way through it. He's now married. He's married and, you know, is living as a man. But if you'll notice, when it comes to sports and bathrooms, we're really dealing not with, it's not equal. It's not like we're getting rid of the word man and men in federal legislation. We're getting rid of the word mom and mother and a pregnant woman and women. Right, so there is this weird kind of anti-woman thing here that I cannot fully account for. And I can tell you that the women involved in this battle, so I get, you know, those of us that are in this fight get love letters from people, you know, personally addressed to us and typed up. And for some reason, this doesn't bother me. I'm missing the gene that's upset by these things. I say, somebody nuked an hour typing me a letter and mailing this. But I can tell you, but it's usually just stuff like this. But I can tell you the women that are involved in this, you cannot imagine the vile stuff that they get on social media and over the phone, the threats against their children, against their lives, against their bodies. And so there is something, and I don't know what it is, but there's some kind of weird spiritual dynamic involved that hates women, right? Yeah, That is exactly how this feels. Yeah, that's exactly how it feels. But it's very specifically an attack on women. That's what's weird about it, right? Because you could say something's demonic in a lot of ways, but it's also, there's a kind of weird specificity to this attack on women, who are the source of generation, I suppose. And so that's what you're actually seeing in sports. And that's why, you know, for obvious biological reasons, but I think for other reasons, it goes in another way. So how do we defeat this stuff? What can we do? So here's our minimal goal, I would say. So think of long-term goals and short-term goals and medium-term goals. The minimal goal that I think we could take care of in the next 3 years is to protect children from the school to sterilization pipeline. Now, there's good news here, because we already know, and if you had looked at the DSM-5 discussion, that's the diagnostic and statistical manual that's used by psychologists and psychiatrists to diagnose mental illnesses. We know that kids, before the craze started, that present with gender dysphoria, if just allowed to get counseling and care and be treated with what's called watchful waiting, right, not socially transitioned, not given drugs, will come out of it. And it's somewhere between 68 and 98% of cases. And the high end is for the boys. The vast majority of boys that are allowed to just go through normal puberty reconcile with their biological sex. So that's the good news. Is we actually know that the other pathway, it's not like it's such some kind of complicated problem for which we have absolutely no idea what to do. We need to be doing much more of that, right? And we already know that. That's not happening, though, with the transition pipeline. We now know that kids that are socially transitioned and then put on puberty blockers, the vast majority continue to cross-sex hormones and surgical transition. So it's what's called iatrogenic. Iatrogenesis means something in which the treatment causes the sickness. Right, the treatment locks them into this. What might actually be a temporary phase or something they're struggling with or something they need help with, but if you know they continue to get social cues that it didn't make sense, might actually reconcile or just allowed to go through puberty, this fast-tracks them. So the intervention itself that's supposed to cure it is largely causing this. Right? Now that means that what we need to do is block the pipeline and make sure that kids are able to get the treatment and the exposure to watchful waiting that they need. Now, for a lot of us, it starts with us getting informed. So this isn't for everyone. You can't all read, but I know some of you can. And so I'm just going to tell you, having spent a while with this, and you're going to say, I want to read 10 books, right? These are probably the best ones. Now, most of these are not written by conservatives or Christians. When Harry Became Sally, is my predecessor at Heritage, who's been here, Ryan Anderson. It's a great book, especially for the policy. Any place to get it? Yeah, so Amazon spiked it last year, but you can get it easily at Barnes & Noble and other online bookstores, but you can't get it at Amazon, which tells you how good it is, right? Irreversible Damage by Abigail Schreier, which is a great kind of reporting, but there have been several books in the last year. Kara Dansky, who is a left-wing feminist, The Abolition of Sex. Material Girls by a progressive lesbian philosopher at the University in the UK, in Kathleen Stock. Best philosophical treatment of this phenomenon I've seen, Material Girls. A book, Trans, by The Economist magazine journalist Helen Joyce. And then The End of Gender by Deborah So, who is a PhD in sexology that now is sort of an activist on this stuff. So if you can just take a picture of that slide if you want. And then on the theological side, these are at the moment, I think, the best four books. New book, The Genesis of Gender by Abigail Favalli at Notre Dame. Unraveling Gender by John Grabowski, who is my former colleague at Catholic University. Love Thy Body by Nancy Piercy. And Strange New World by Carl Truman. So here's your product placement. And if you want the full story, it's actually The Rise and Triumph of the Modern Self. If you want the distillation, it's there. So we need to get informed on this because the issues are kind of complicated, as you can imagine. I had 4 hours. I've never had 4 hours to talk about this. And you know what I was doing this morning? I was pulling a bunch of stuff out that I thought I was going to have time to talk about. So this is complicated. We have got to talk about male and female as a reality. So if you're a Christian or you're Jewish, we've got to talk about this. I know some of you are pastors. You've got to talk about this as a reality because there is an attack on these kind of fundamental truths, all of which are present in Genesis, that were created. We're not ultimate reality, that we're a unity of body and soul, right? And so our bodies are part of who we are, that we're designed for each other, male and female, and we're designed to be social and to be fruitful and multiply. Guess what? There's an attack on every one of those ideas. And so if you're not talking about it, what you're doing is you're allowing social media to catechize your flock, and you're not providing counter-programming. So we have to talk about that. And then there's this painful philosophical thing, and we have to be careful about how we talk about these things. I would just recommend you just stop using the word gender. It's not quite this simple, but just don't even use the word anymore. Just insist on using the word sex. It will seem weird and obnoxious, but you know, sometimes that's good. But it's also actually hard to define sex. So everyone knows intuitively what a boy is and what a girl is, and we can infallibly, I'm quite certain I could say each one of you and what you are, right, with absolute certainty, despite the variation. But when it comes down to defining what sex is, it's actually kind of hard. And so this is how the other side gets us mixed up. Because right, they want to say this is all a kind of complicated spectrum and not everybody is a boy or a girl, right? That's their claim. So all they need to do is get you saying, no, they're boys and girls, and then explaining it in a way that doesn't hold water, right? This is how this always goes. And so anybody want to try to define what a male is? Or someone define for me, try to define what is a female. Now, I'm not picking on you, so I just want... Well, you're a doctor. No, I'm not allowed to do that. That was cheating. Yeah, I knew you were a doctor, too. It took me a second. Yeah, I was like, wait a second. No, yeah, that's going to mess up the whole gag, right? Okay, so we won't do this. That was my fault, and I even knew that. I should have called on you at the end. So here's what people want to say. Well, a woman is somebody that has babies. Well, what about women that don't have babies? That means they're not women, if your definition's right, right? So if you want a definition, you need to include all members of the set in the definition. And so if you say, a woman is someone who has a uterus. Okay, right, you see the problem, right? Here's a really complicated one. And this is one that I can tell you policy people, I've gone around, so this is the job of the rare philosopher in a policy in Washington dealing with lawyers, is having to go around and, oh no, that's not quite right. You know, y'all are getting this wrong. Here's the tempting way to say, well, it's defined chromosomally. So a female is anyone who has XX chromosomes, and a male is anyone who has XY chromosomes. Anybody know the problem with that? There are exceptions. There are disorders of sexual development, and there's a bunch of complicated exceptions to this. They're rare. Now, it turns out these exceptions have nothing to do with gender ideology. So the kids that are presenting, right, they're people that have, you know, 2X chromosomes or an extra Y chromosome. There's even a complicated mosaic in which some people's cells will have XY and some will have XX. These are called disorders of sexual development. You may have not known that, but anyone that's in the debate is going to know this. And so what they're wanting to say is that it's a spectrum. And you say, oh, no, everybody's either XY or XX. Not true. Now, what you don't know is that it has nothing to do with gender ideology. So if you take a boy who says, oh, I think I'm a girl, he almost never is dealing with one of these genetic anomalies or these developmental anomalies because they're very, very rare. And for a long time, they're called intersex. That's kind of a bad term because it implies that they're between two sexes, right? And if you go to the intersex website, they're really angry about gender ideology because they don't want to get sucked into this. And so you got to define the terms carefully. Now, you almost said it, but it's essentially, you've got to, so when you're dealing with definitions of organisms, organisms aren't fixed things. We all exist along developmental pathways, right? So if you're going to define a human, it can't be someone that has two legs all the time, right? Because if you get your legs cut off, that would mean you're not a human. And so notice, you can see why this would be relevant in the abortion debate, right? Because you have to come up with a definition that includes people along the developmental pathways. And so you could say, well, a woman is someone who is or has or will or would, but for developmental anomalies, produce ova. That's kind of complicated, right? That's a mouthful. But what am I doing? I'm saying, well, they would do this, or they will, or they could, or they would if they followed the normal developmental pathway. And so you have to explain organisms and define them that take account of the fact that we change through time and that there are normal and abnormal developmental pathways. And Everyone recognizes that. If you deny the difference between normal and abnormal, you wouldn't recognize when a heart is being abnormal and need fixing, right? So you have to presuppose that. So here's the way I define it. I'll just give it to you. This is what we gave to the Department of Education because they claimed there wasn't a definition. A human male is minimally a member of the human species that under normal development produces relatively small mobile gametes, sperm, at some point in his life cycle and has a reproductive and endocrine system oriented around the production of that gamete. And then a female is the alternative, right? A female is a large, relatively immobile gamete. And this is how it goes for mammals. And so if you're a male, under normal development, at some point in your life cycle, you're going to produce the small gamete that moves. And if you're a female, under normal development in your life cycle, you're going to be the kind of organism that produces the relatively large, compared to the other thing, relatively immobile gamete. Now, that doesn't mean that sex is just a gamete, because what happens is that there's this whole developmental program and orientation of the body toward that, ordered toward reproduction, right? So it's the whole organism, yeah. It's not reducible, though, to chromosomes. Under normal development, males will have XY chromosomes, and females will have XX chromosomes. But if you define male and female in that way, you rule out the exceptions and it falls apart, right? So I want you to get that in your head. It has to do with the organism's orientation and structuring around the production of two different kind of gametes. Now, why does that matter? There are exactly two gametes. There is no third gamete. So there are people with disorders of sexual development that don't produce sperm or don't produce eggs, right? But there's not a third one in there. There are exactly two, and it takes one of each together, united, in order to create a new human organism. So you see, so this is a binary. Just by definition, as long as you define it right, there's two. There's only two. There's not a third, right? That's how you do it. Now, you know, it's not. I know you're not going to probably pop this out at the next, you know, church potluck or whatever, right? It's tough. It's tough enough that some of the smartest policy people in the world, I can tell you, because I've been involved in these, would write like legislation and try to write legislation. And then you go in there and they're like, oh no, this is going to blow this up because this isn't right, you know. And so this is why we got to get this stuff right. Immunize your children. So somebody asked me at the break, well, how does this stuff work? Because this isn't going to last, because if they're sterilizing themselves, they won't have children. That's true. They will recruit your children. That's how this works. And that's exactly what they're doing. So don't think that's going to disappear. And then how do we deal with it in the States? This is the stuff I'll end on. So we spent a bunch of time thinking about this at Heritage, and not just Heritage, a bunch of other organizations. Great people I mentioned at the Manhattan Institute in Manhattan, for instance, that are working really hard on this. A lot of it behind the scenes, honestly, for obvious reasons. But what we're going to have between now and 2025 is the Department of Health and Human Services and Department of Justice under Joe Biden that is pushing full steam ahead on this. And by the way, they're polling, like if you ask people, should kids be allowed to have cross-sex surgery as minors? Like 72% of the population says no. So that's bad. I mean, you could say, should people be able to shoot people in the streets? And it'd be like 60%. I mean, that's what's weird. So to get 72%, no politician wants to be associated with something that's bad. And then yet last week, the President of the United States went on national television and allowed himself to be interviewed by a man pretending to be a woman. All right, so that is how deeply committed they are to the ideologues and the activists that are in their base. And so what we're going to have in the next couple of years is there's going to be a fight between some states that are going to try to do something about it and the federal government that's going to try to stop them. So what do we want the fight to be over? We don't want the fight to be over, well, you people are prudes and don't like sex. We don't want the fight to be over, let's sick the Child Protective Services on the parents. That's one thing that some people tried. They tried that in Texas. My friends in Texas tried that. What we want to do, there's kind of two aspects of this. We're going to need legislation that focuses on the mouth of the pipeline. So y'all remember what the mouth of the pipeline is, social transition. Where does that happen? Schools. And so that's got to get stopped up. And so there's a bunch of stuff you can do legislatively there. And guess what? Florida's already done it. The Parents' Rights in Education Bill creates choice in education, transparency, and accountability. So schools get sued. And by the way, they gave the parents a private right of action so they can sue the schools if they socially transition their children. All right, but Florida was very smart. They just focused on the school part. And people were upset with them because the Senate in Florida did not take up a bill to criminalize the drugs and the surgery on kids. And people thought they were making a mistake. So some other states did that. So Alabama, as I told you all last night, passed a law in the last session making it a Class C felony. Arkansas passed another law that's actually designed better. What they did, they prohibited it, said we're not going to spend Medicaid dollars on this, but they didn't provide a criminal penalty. Right? So the state can't get involved in enforcing it. They prohibited it. And so what they did is they created, again, what's called a private right of action. And that's just where the state says, we're going to tell you that you as an individual citizen have the right to sue in civil court for this type of wrong if this is done to you. All right? Because now, why would you need that? Well, you need that because in a lot of states, the statute of limitations on malpractice is only about 2 years. And so if you're a 15-year-old girl that's getting testosterone and double mastectomy, you might not realize that was a disaster until you're 30. And so this is what Arkansas did. They said, we're going to give everyone a private right of action. We're going to prohibit but not criminalize. And we're going to increase the statute of limitations for 20 years past everyone's 18th birthday. All right? So now if you're the insurance company, the malpractice insurance company, you're the gender clinic, you're the doctor, you're thinking, okay, this 16-year-old girl, she could sue me when she's 35 years old. Right? That's the long arm of the law reaching out. So notice that there's no criminalization there, and so it doesn't get into weird, complicated things. Why is it complicated to criminalize this right now? It's complicated because the medical organizations say this is the proper standard of care. And so you got to think about this from the perspective of a judge. Judges aren't experts in these things. And so you're in Alabama, right? And the legislature in Alabama says this is going to be a felony. Any doctor that does this, it can be arrested and charged with this felony. And so then the ACLU takes you to court, and the Department of Justice takes you to court, and they have testimony from things called the American Medical Association and the American Academy of Pediatrics and WPATH, right, telling you, oh no, this is all solid science. We know this is the proper way that children should be treated, and it would be cruel and unusual and abusive, in fact, to withhold this from children. Okay, so you're a judge. You don't know anything about this, right? What are you going to do? Are you going to say, well, I'm just going to go with these guys in the legislature? Or are you going to go with the people claiming to speak for science? Every time you're going to go with the people speaking for science. This has been the problem. And so guess what? Alabama's about to be, they're about to go to trial. There's a trial going on right now in Arkansas. And so everyone's instinct was, we've got a red state. Let's just make this stuff illegal. Not recognizing that that's really hard to do because at the moment the medical authorities say this is the proper way to treat people. You see what a problem that is? That is a real problem. And so we have to change that scenario for judges. That's what Florida just did. Florida was thinking way ahead, so they were doing what conservatives don't normally do, right? Rather than either wimp out or do something that was viscerally satisfying and ineffective, they said, no, wait, that's a problem. What are we going to do? Well, they have a board of health that's appointed by a guy named Ron DeSantis, whom you may have heard of. So the board of health spent months having hearings, bringing testimony, bringing scientists from Europe, and then they issued a massive, multi-hundred page report on the science and medical details about this and told you in much more detail than I've given you why this stuff is not medically indicated, it's experimental, it's not based on good research, it's probably harmful. And therefore, under their authority, no Medicaid dollars would be spent on this. So in that state, they had say over with the Medicaid dollars. But notice that didn't do anything for doctors in private clinics or anything. So that happened a few months ago. But then they had a board of medicine, again, board of medicine and a board of osteopathy, also appointed many of them by the governor, that had their own hearings over the last 2 weeks. Same sort of thing. Now the shrieking and the screaming at this point were getting unbearable about what was happening because the other side figured out what's going on. They said, oh boy, yeah, they're not being stupid anymore, are they? And yesterday, both of those boards voted in the same way that the Board of Health had. So now a doctor in Florida, it's still not illegal, but a doctor that does this can lose his license, right? And he's very unlikely to get insurance to pay for it in Florida. And the legislature has done nothing so far. They've passed laws clogging up the pipeline in the mouth, and the health bureaucracy under its regulatory authority has dealt with it. So now what happens if, I'm just speculating, what if the Florida legislature now in the next session says, okay, we're going to make this a criminal offense. They're going to get sued. It's going to go to a judge. And he's going to have to say, oh, they're just acting consistent with the relevant medical authority in their state. They're not going off half-cocked, right? Now, this is really smart. And now, Florida, it's amazing. Now, you know, I don't endorse candidates. I can't do that. But Ron DeSantis had two huge tests. One was whether the lockdowns were a good idea and actually helped or not. And the other was this. And there were 50 states, and there was one governor that passed these two absolutely crucial tests. He did it in both cases. Now, the good news is that, as I said last night, the actual proves the possible. Other states don't have to go to all that trouble. There's already a big report in Florida. Right? You can hold your own hearings, and you can do exactly the same thing. Now, every state's going to have different medical boards, and it's very complicated. But I'm absolutely certain that there are between 6 and 12 states that have a red governor and a red legislature and a regulatory apparatus that's such that they could do the same thing that Florida's done, both on the education side and on the health side, and they could do it in 2023. Now, that's not going to stop it. What that's going to do is that's going to set up a fight between a bunch of states who've done it the right way and the federal government. At the same time, other countries that have been ahead of us on this are stopping it, right? And so it's going to be a fight nationally televised over the science and the medicine. That is the fight we want to have, and that's the fight we can win. And so that's what we need to have happen. And it would be great if Montana were one of those states. All right? We also have to debunk bad science, by the way. That's a part that the people that are specialists, and my friend Lior Sapir at the Manhattan Institute is doing a great job of this. There are a lot of scientists and doctors actually working on this issue. They're mostly afraid at the moment, though, to talk about it publicly. But they're going to be needed to be called on for testimony in these states. And then good legal prohibitions. I think that what Arkansas did in the so-called SAFE Act, it's actually a really good way of handling it, where you create a private right of action, but don't criminalize it, because then you're not sicking the Attorney General and the Child Protective Services on people. It focuses on the clinics that are doing it, not on the parents. And there's an amplified version of this that's hosted by the Family Policy Alliance called Help Not Harm. It's like if a state said, well, we want to do kind of what Arkansas did. Help Not Harm is just an up-to-date, updated, better version of that. They don't need to write new legislation. And then lawfare. So lawfare is a play on the word warfare. Lawfare is suing. So there need to be suits against children who have been socially transitioned, like January Littlejohn is doing in Florida. There are going to need to be class action lawsuits against the clinics that do this. But in order for those to be possible, there have to be laws in states allowing that. You can't sue if you don't have a right to sue in a state. There's already at least two law firms I know of, people that I know that, including one that was two women that were at other big law firms, left, started a partnership specifically to sue on this. Their whole law practice is going to be dedicated to, hope they get fabulously wealthy. And this growing army of detransitioners that I mentioned. This is the hearings actually just last week in Florida. So that's Chloe Cole, whom I didn't tell you about, is a young detransition girl. Again, she had testosterone and a double mastectomy. That's her in the foreground, young, also very articulate. That's Alina Kirshner that I told you about a few minutes ago from Illinois. Kat Catlinson, also a girl. So these are all sisters in the sense that they didn't have a full transition. The next one is actually someone who went through the full transition, still presents as a woman, but says, look, I'm not a woman. This is what the doctors did to me, and now I look weird. Okay, that whole row is people doing this. These are brave. These are 18, 19, 20-year-olds. They're going before hostile media and hostile judges and witnesses and testifying about what has been done to them. Now, I hope it's just a handful and we beat it that way. I don't want it to be thousands of them. But why am I so optimistic? I'm optimistic. In fact, I was hearing about, you know, Ronald Reagan, the great quote that he gave before he became president the first time, was asked what his strategy for the Soviet Union was. He said, well, my strategy is pretty simple. We win, they lose. That was the strategy, right? It made people crazy, and then 10 years that we won and they lost, right? The reason is that reality is on our side. We have an economic system that is matches economic reality better than the Soviets had. And that's the good news here. Reality is on our side. Biological sex is a real thing. Human nature is a real thing. It has a say. It bites back when you deny it. And so we need to just find the way to be the good advocates that can actually defend this and that can protect the people and come between the people, the primary victims, that are being targeted, unfortunately, by this kind of weird medical industrial complex. But I'm convinced that if we do it and do it the right way, we win. Thank you very much.